is that there's a lot of change and a lot of transition that's in the air. I think what I picked up on and what Evan confirmed is that some of you already know, kind of have clarity on your path. It's possible that some of you may not have clarity on your path. So I want to, just as a personal wish and blessing, I wish everybody success, incredible success and happiness. And whatever the next step or the next chapter is, I wish you just the most incredible blessings. And may the blessings that are about to come completely eclipse any blessings that you've already experienced and blow them out of the water, so to speak. All right, so that's a personal wish for all of you and for all of us, that we should all be blessed with everything we need. So I guess pursuant to the theme, I wanted to speak about the notion of change and transition, and also anxiety and worry, because, you know, with every change and transition, there's always anxiety and worry in general. You know, life, I don't know, at least, you know, the world that I seem to be living in, there are some stresses around us, around me, and I would venture to say that each one of us has stress. So I want to spend the next, I don't know, 50 minutes or so exploring a Jewish approach to dealing with stress, dealing with the unknown, dealing with things that might potentially inhibit our full happiness potential. And speaking of happiness, I want to mention this. I want to tell you a joke. So the joke goes that two therapists meet each other. They were in the same class back in school, therapy school, whatever, back in school. And they meet each other after 20 years on the job. And after 20 years, one of the guys is looking young and fresh, like he just stepped out of school. And the other one is looking old and tired and worn. So the fellow that's looking a little beat up says to the other guy, says, "I don't get it. You know, 20 years listening to people's tsaras, you know what tsaras are, right? The trials and tribulations and negative and heartbreaks and everything. 20 years has taken such a toll on me. How do you look so fresh after listening to so much of people's worries and anxieties?" And the other fellow says to him, "What, you're actually listening?" Anyway, that's a joke. But the point is that life, all right, listen, life can sometimes get us down, right? It's the nature of things. So I want to take, again, I want to spend some time today exploring a Jewish approach to dealing with the unknown, dealing with the future, dealing with change and transition, and maybe even dealing with things that don't exactly look the way you and I want them to look. How do we, what is a approach or an approach to that? So the first thing I want to start out by saying is that In general, human beings begin happy. When I say begin happy, what I mean is, as children, in general, your mileage may vary, but in general, the nature of a human being is to be happy. And you see this with kids, you see this basically before the first disappointment, everyone's happy, right? Think about it. It's like life. I know that when we're born, the first thing we do is cry, but we get over that pretty quickly. The natural state of the human being is happiness. I will tell you, it's not just an anecdotal thing. I'm actually quoting or paraphrasing the teachings of Jewish mysticism, the teachings of Kabbalah. Kabbalah teaches that the natural state of the human soul is to be happy. And that's why, in most cases, or at least in many cases, children in their natural disposition are happy. Right? Kids on a playground, they're running around, they're happy, no care in the world. The natural state of human beings are happy. What changes? Well, in one word, what changes is life. Life happens, and life brings it all sorts of things. You know, we suddenly at some point encounter things that don't seem to be right, or things that don't seem to be the way we thought they would be. We become disappointed. Maybe we are lied to. Maybe we are heartbroken about something. Whatever it is, something happens to disappoint us, and life, in that sense, you know, those occurrences happen again and again, and at some point, we become a little bit distanced from where we are inherently. So, in this session, I want to go through a few of the typical causes of worry, anxiety, unhappiness, etc., and see what we might find in Jewish thought to help us combat that. So the three areas that I want to focus on, three unhappiness causes or catalysts that I want to focus on today are, number one, daily stresses and annoyances. Like the everyday stress of life and the everyday annoyance of life and the everyday disappointment of life, how to deal with that. That's number one. Number two is the stress of having too much to do. Yeah, anybody ever have that? Like you just have too much to do, like overload. You wake up in the morning, it's like, you know what? I don't even want to get up today. I don't even want to get out of bed. It's too overwhelming. So again, number one is just the daily stresses and annoyances. Number two is having too much to do, which is different than the first one. And that's okay. And then number three is worrying about what the future will bring. Worrying about what the future, the unknown, that is yet to happen. Anxiety over the future. And I will tell you that I think all of us here have had experiences of all three stressors. We've had daily stresses and annoyances, we've had too much to do, and we've had worry about the future. It's possible that we might have all three at the same time, right? And either way, these are things that might take away from our natural, buoyant, and effervescent happy state. So let's explore how to perhaps manage these things. And I think, again, without getting super specific, I think that they all relate to kind of, you know, everyone here in this space. You know, if this was perhaps a normal time, so to speak, you know, non-pandemic and just everything is normal, we would still probably have all of this full list to think about. The daily stress and annoyances, too much to do, and worry about the, you know, what the future might bring. Especially given the specific scenario and situation that we're all in and that, you know, you're specifically in, I think that it's even more relevant and pertinent. So I want to begin by sharing my screen. Let's see if that's a possibility. It looks like it is. Hold on. All right, tell me if you can see my screen.
Yeah, we can see it.
Okay, great. All right, let's jump in. This is a poem, which I think is really funny. All right, Evan, do you want to begin with text number one?
I would have never imagined a rabbi sharing a Charles Bukowski poem.
Yeah. Listen, what? I don't have surprises up my sleeve. I'm. All right.
It's not the large things that send a man to the madhouse. No, it's the continuing series of small tragedies that send a man to the madhouse. Not the death of his love, but a shoelace that snaps with no time left. The dread of life is that swarm of trivialities that can kill quicker than cancer and which are always there. License plates or taxes or expired driver's license or hiring or firing. Doing it or having it done to you, or roaches or flies, or a broken hook on a screen, or out of gas, or too much gas, the sink's stopped up, the landlord's drunk.
Yeah, classic, right? Classic stuff. So here's the point. The point that he's making is that sometimes what puts us over the edge are not actually the big things. It's the small little things that just get at us and grate on us and drive us absolutely bananas. So what to do? What to do when the little stuff is really driving us crazy? So I want to share with you a word that we all know in one context but means something else in modern psychology. And the word that I'm referring to is patience. The word I'm referring to is patience. Now, if I asked you, you know, just cold, not in this context, what does patience mean? You would probably tell me that patience means, you know, being able to wait for something to happen, right? Patience means being able to wait patiently. It's like you tell the kids, when are we going to get there? We're not, you know, a road trip. When are we going to get there? 2 hours. Yeah, be patient. That's one definition of patience. But understood by modern psychologists, patience is so much more than that. And here's the definition that I'll share with you about patience, and maybe you are familiar with it, but either way, it's a powerful definition. Patience is the ability to be at peace with a reality that is not like the reality that you would like. Does that make sense? Patience is the ability to be at peace with a reality that looks very different from what you'd love for it to be. In other words, the dissonance, the gap between where you are, not where you are, sorry, between what you have and what you want could cause stress, right? You're over here. Whatever here is, you want to be there, right? That's the space between what you have and what you want can cause stress. Patience is the ability to let go and not be stressed out. In other words, stated in other terms, patience is the ability to fully, unequivocally, without any strings attached, accept and embrace the reality that is, which goes a long way to reducing stress. Does that make sense? Yes? By the way, please don't think that what I'm saying is that in life, we should always be satisfied with the status quo and never want to change anything and just go with the flow and be completely happy with whatever goes down. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is sometimes, and you and I know this, sometimes in life, it's a positive thing and a healthy thing to be able to let go of the picture that we had in our mind of what should be and just take a deep breath and accept the reality that is. You know, I've heard a definition, the difference between pain and suffering, right? What's pain? Pain is objective. Suffering is, again, this is just one definition. Suffering is what we tack onto the pain. Pain is the pain, but the suffering is how come it's not like something else? You know, why isn't it, this way or that way or the other? The suffering is than not letting go of what we wanted to have. Okay, so let's now jump back into the, I'm going to share my text once again. Let's look at text number two. Okay. Give me a moment. Okay, here we go. Here is from the Wiley Blackwell Handbook of Positive Psychological Interventions, published in 2014. Here is a definition of patience. Okay, who would like to read? Joel, are you up to it?
Sure.
Thanks.
Patience, defined as the propensity to wait calmly in the face of frustration, adversity, or suffering, is a character strength just beginning to receive substantial psychological inquiry. Initial evidence supports that interventions intended to increase patience also lead to increases in well-being. Though people tend to think of the outward manifestations of patience, calm and tolerant behavior, it also has an inward emotional aspect, serene inner states. In fact, this inner component may be the defining feature of the virtue. Patience is not to delay of gratification, because delay of gratification involves the choice of whether or not to wait for rewards. In contrast, patience does not always involve a choice of whether or not to wait. The only choice a person may make is deciding how to wait. It may be helpful to conceptualize patience as a character strength, where instead of seeking to change the situation, people exert control by changing themselves to fit the situation. Thus, patient people are not being passive, but are actively adapting to face their circumstances.
Thank you. I think that is, to me personally, it's a very, very powerful reading and concept. Patience, I love this. Patience is not choosing whether or not to wait, but it's rather choosing how to wait or how to be in this situation given the parameters of the situation. In other words, like I said before, it's not trying to change the situation, but it's about changing ourselves. In fact, I almost word for word quoted the great Viktor Frankl, who writes, when we are no longer able to change a situation, we are challenged to change ourselves. And I don't know if modern psychologists would even agree with the first half of that situation. first half of that statement, which is when we are no longer able to change a situation. Sometimes whether or not we're able to change a situation doesn't mean that we shouldn't change ourselves. Again, your mileage may vary depending on the situation. Obviously, there are certain situations that demand change, and we should never rest until that situation is changed. But sometimes, and I would say very often, the stuff that stresses us out, the stuff that sets us off perhaps, the stuff that gets us all worked up, are things that if we just changed ourselves, would not be as stressful and would not really drive us bonkers as they are. All right, so that is an opening idea about patience and the psychological, and a major stream in modern psychology is positive psychology, and this is a big, big, big and important teaching in positive psychology, the idea of patience, not the outward, as Joel read, not the outward manifestation of such, which is somebody sitting calmly and waiting, because that doesn't mean that that inside they're not stressed. It's inner work. It's working on ourselves on the inside to really let go. Think of this. This is an example that I often think of. You know, you take a rubber band and you hold one side of the rubber band, so to speak. I know it's round, but, you know, one part of the rubber band. And then you hold another part of the rubber band, and then you pull them apart. The further you pull them apart, the more tension there is, right? The more stress there is in the rubber band, in the band, right? The more tension, the more difficult it is. And it's the same thing. If we're in one place, but the reality around us is in a different place, you know, the further those are apart from each other, the further, you know, away, the greater the gap, the greater the tension. So either we could hope and wish that the situation change, or we can change ourselves to embrace the reality. Again, for the third time, it doesn't mean that every reality should be embraced. Nonetheless, there are many realities that we would do good to embrace. Let's bring this into a Jewish framework, because so far we've discussed this in modern terms. Literature, psychology. Let's talk about this in Jewish terms. From a Jewish perspective, there is a very, very powerful approach here. And again, I'm going to share my screen with you. Bear with me. We read this already. Let's find text number 3. Okay, this is from the great Hasidic master, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev. Lived in the 1700s. Take a look. Allison, please read text number 3.
We should clearly recognize that our travels to different places are not random, God forbid, but specifically directed by God. God's intention is that a particular person has a specific portion to rectify in a particular place, whether through Torah study and prayer, or through eating, drinking, and sleeping for the sake of heaven, or through another means of serving God.
1 second, let's see if there's a little bit more. It looks like there might be a little bit more on the next page. Here we go, yeah.
As the Baal Shem Tov of righteous memory explained the verse Psalms 37:23, God establishes the steps of man, meaning God imparts the desire to a person to travel to a specific place, God's intention being that the person should engage in a particular divine service, thereby rectifying what this person must rectify. Therefore, when we come to a particular place, we must take this to heart and ask ourselves, why am I here? For what purpose did God bring me here? It is certainly not for naught.
Thank you. And let me explain the context of this reading and why we're reading it and how it fits into this conversation. So this is a very powerful Jewish teaching, and it's from Psalms, as we just read. It's God establishes the footsteps of man, of human beings. It's from Psalms, which is, you know, King David's poetry. So it's classic Jewish thought, classic Jewish scripture, but it's explained by the mystics, by the Kabbalists and the Hasidic masters in such a beautiful way. And the core of the idea is that nothing is by chance and nothing is by happenstance. So if we find ourselves in a certain situation, in this case, in the context of text 3, it's in a particular geographic location, right? If you find yourself in a city and you didn't plan on being in that city, like you were flying to L.A., but somehow now you're in Denver. Why are you in Denver? Who knows? You're in Denver now. So here are the two options. You can be kicking and screaming, I need to be in LA. Or, and this is where the Jewish perspective comes in and the Kabbalistic perspective comes in, or if I'm in Denver, I need to be in Denver. How do I know that? Because I'm in Denver, right? Because God is in control, and God is guiding my footsteps. And so if I find myself in Denver, there's something that I need to do in Denver that Denver has been waiting since the beginning of time for me to do this mitzvah, study this Torah, you know, reach out to someone, whatever it is, right? And we might not know what it is, you know, immediately, but there's something positive that I need to do here. Now, here's the deal. The flight delay, let's just give a simple example, right? Something happened, emergency landing, whatever. Look, the deal is like this. The plane needed to land. It's going to take the same amount of hours to fix, right? Whether or not they're going to put you on the same plane or reroute you on a different flight, yeah, you can go up to the ticket counter and negotiate. Either way, you have a few hours on the ground. This is where you and I have the choice. This is what patience is, right? Are we going to continue to fight the reality and claw and kick and scream and be miserable about it because we need it to be in LA by now? Or will we embrace the reality? But again, from a Jewish perspective, that's just embracing the reality because, you know, I might as well, right? But it's understanding that this reality that I did not plan might have been planned by a higher authority, might have been planned by a higher consciousness than our own. And therefore, there's something to do. I'll give you an example of this, a really powerful story. It was in, February 1979. And there was a Jewish women's convention in Detroit, Michigan. Now, if you've ever lived in Detroit, Michigan, you know that February, I haven't, but I know enough about that part of the world, that part of the country, to know that in February, weather may not always be accommodating. So there was this Chabad Women's Convention in Detroit in February, and the convention was like a three-day conference, a weekend thing, I think. And it was, it went Thursday, Friday, Shabbat, and then Sunday. And Sunday, everyone was going to go home. Well, Sunday morning, guess what? It starts snowing. And it's a blizzard. And as the participants of the convention soon find out, all the flights, one after the other, are canceled. And, everyone's panicking. You know, they got to get home and got to get back home to the family and to the work. And, you know, Monday morning, I got to get back home. So because it was a Chabad, you know, convention, Chabad-affiliated convention, so they sent a message, or they called, whatever, the secretary of the Chabad Rebbe, the Lubavitcher Rebbe in Brooklyn. And they said, you know, just to let you know what's going on and, asking for advice. Because we're stuck in Detroit, everyone's stuck in Detroit. So the Rebbe responded through a secretary, stuck? No one's ever stuck if you're in Detroit. Then you're meant to be in Detroit and there's something else that needs to be done. You're stuck in Detroit? There's no such thing in this world as stuck. So it's similar to what the Rebbe said to Jonathan Sacks, you know, the former chief rabbi of the UK. By the way, he sent out a message last week that he was diagnosed with cancer. He's undergoing treatment. So we'll just mention a prayer for a speedy recovery for Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks. May he be well, and may everyone who needs healing also have healing. So Jonathan Sacks mentions that when he was studying, I think it was Cambridge or Oxford, I always forget which one he was at, one of the two. He took a summer and he was vacationing and traveling and meeting with great global leaders. And he was asking everybody, you know, he was interviewing great leaders. And he came to Lubavitcher Rebbe and he started asking questions, but very quickly, the Rebbe turned the tables and started asking him questions. And he said, so what are you doing for Jewish life on campus? Well, he wasn't a rabbi at that point. He was just a student. So he said, in the situation that I currently find myself in, I don't really have the time or whatever. The Rebbe said, look, no one finds themselves in a situation. You create your situations. You're not stuck. Don't be a victim of circumstance. If you're there, then it's there to accomplish. Then there's something for you to accomplish there. So again, I know I'm giving a lot of elaboration on this first idea, but I think it's important because I think, like the shoelace poem, the daily stressors of life can sometimes really, really get at us. And oftentimes, that's a product of expectations. We have certain expectations.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, for sure.
So it seems contrary to the concept of free will that I thought was embedded in Judaism, that God doesn't, there's not such a thing as a minute-by-minute plan that God has for you, that you know, everything that happens is, well, that, you know, that happened because God had that in the plan for you.
Free choice, you know, you're right. Free choice is 100% the core fundamental idea of Judaism. But here's where free choice comes in. Free choice is the choice to respond in that situation. In other words, you're put into that scene intentionally. There's a scene that God puts you and I into a scene, into a place, intentionally, by design. The free choice is, now what are you going to do about it? What am I going to do about it, right? What are we going to do about it in that moment? Number one, are we going to reject it, resist it, embrace it, number one? Number two, even if we embrace it, what are we actually going to do about it at that point? And by the way, like I mentioned, this is now number four. I'm counting. This is the fourth time I'm giving this disclaimer. Sometimes God puts us into a situation to change it, 100% to change it and not embrace it. Again, it takes a little bit of seichel and some good luck to know which one it is. But listen, are we going to get it right all the time? Absolutely not. Ein tzadik ba'aretz asher ya'aseh tov la'yechta. King Solomon writes, there's no righteous person in this planet who only does good and doesn't sometimes mess up. So that we're going to get it right, we're not going to always get it right. But that our job is to try to get it right 100%. But yeah, no, you're right. Free choice is free choice. By the way, I will say that a lot of the things, and Joel, again, addressing your question, which is an excellent question, a lot of things that you and I would take for granted that we chose, I will posit today, right now, 11:35 a.m., you never chose. You think you chose, you never chose. Like where you went to college, you think you chose, you did not choose. And I know what you're going to say, but I did choose. You didn't choose. Yeah, you chose which parents to be born to. You chose which city to grow up in. You chose which elementary school to go to. Of course not. Of course not. And all of that went into your decision and your peer group and all of those influences, right? There's so much, I would say, 99, I would even say 0.9, but I don't want to make anyone a little too nervous. Listen, getting a little bit nervous is fine. I don't mind making you all a little uncomfortable. Again, if you really think about it and are really honest, you will soon realize that most of the choices that you made weren't 100% choices. When I say most of the choices, I don't mean the moral choices. Those are 100% choice. What I mean is the contextual stuff. A lot of that is a product of a lot of factors that are outside of you. The one area, and this is very clear in Talmud, it says, Hakol bidei shamayim, everything is in the hands of heaven, chutz, except, miyirat shamayim, except for the fear of heaven. And the fear of heaven, what that means, it's a phrase, it's a euphemism, what it means is the moral choices that we make. Fear of heaven doesn't mean like, are you afraid of God? That's a literal meaning of it. That's not what it actually means. What it means is everything, God controls the world except for our moral decisions. In other words, right and wrong decisions. That is completely in our control. And I would put this into it. In other words, if you're stuck in Detroit, I gave Denver. I personally would like rather be stuck in Denver, but whatever, that's just me. So if you're stuck in Denver, I've always wanted to visit Denver. Yeah, you're stuck in Denver and you think you're stuck. So now this is your choice, right? You were in Denver. The Kabbalists would tell you that God sent you to Denver. So now here's the choice. What are you going to do about it? Are you going to scream at the gate, at the person behind the counter over there? Like it's their fault? Are you going to scream at them? Are you going to like pout? Are you going to be miserable? Are you going to, you know, fire off an angry email to the CEO of the airline? Or you're going to find somebody that maybe needs help or figure out something positive to do over there.
Rabbi,
yeah. Yeah, for sure.
How do we reconcile this notion that God sort of controls all with something like the Holocaust?
Now you're asking a question that I can't answer. That question I can't answer. No, because I can't. Correct. The Holocaust is a question only because of this fundamental Jewish idea. Because if we don't have this fundamental Jewish idea, then there's no question about the Holocaust. How did it happen? Why not? Why not? Why shouldn't it happen? I'm not saying that it's justified, God forbid. What I'm saying is it shouldn't surprise us. The very fact that we are appalled and we say, you know, where was God and how could God allow it? The question itself is an indicator that we have this core belief that God does, or at least should, run the show. How then, if God does run the show, could God have allowed it to happen? That's the question. That's the unanswerable question. That question really is the same question that drives this is obviously on a larger scale, but it drives any query of, you know, how do bad things happen to good people? I was just communicating with Kenneth Feinberg. Anybody familiar with Kenneth Feinberg? He's an attorney in D.C. Yeah. Special master of 9/11 Victims Fund. So, and he's done like the BP oil spill, and he's doing now Boeing 737 MAX.
The auto bankruptcies before then.
Yeah, auto bankruptcies. He's a guy that the government and companies trust to kind of distribute money. So we're actually via Zoom bringing him to Atlanta to speak in a few weeks on November 5th. So about a week and a half. He's going to speak. The topic that I asked him to speak about is putting a price on life. You know, how do you value life, and how does that work with the Jewish notion of life being infinite? And, you know, how does it influence the work that he does? So he's a fascinating guy. So I've known him for a little bit now, and he agreed to graciously speak to the community. So anyway, if you want to join that, you can find it on the website, on our website, intownjewishacademy.org. He's incredible. He's really incredible and has incredible stories from 9/11 and other instances. But the reason that I mentioned that is, you know, he actually met with every single family of every victim that wanted to, that was compensated by the government after 9/11, after the tragedy of 9/11. So, you know, how do you look at someone? You don't tell someone, the wife, parent, child, whatever, sibling of a victim, and say, you know, God made that happen. It's not obviously not something that we do. It wouldn't be morally correct. It wouldn't be even on any level correct. So how do we reconcile it? We're stuck with a question. And the question is, we know that God runs the show. We know that God has a plan. How does this reconcile? How does this fit in? And that's where the question remains. If we had an answer to that question, I would say, it's like what Elie Wiesel once said to somebody who asked him, how did God allow the Holocaust to happen? He said to this person, if I gave you a good explanation, would it make you sleep better at night? Like, why are you asking, right? But is it to kind of make ourselves feel better? That wouldn't be good either, right? We don't really even want an answer to the question, because an answer to the question means that the tension is resolved. That means like, okay, now I understand the Holocaust. Do we ever want to get to a place where we actually understand the Holocaust? So what I'm saying is, your question is a good question, and stay with the question. We should always stay with that question and never understand, unless God, you know, reveals some other plan, right? We should never have an answer to the question of how could the Holocaust happen. Yeah, that's the ultimate question, amongst others of this summation. But sorry, there was another question that was just being
Rabbi,
asked.
Rabbi, I was going to ask. I mean, didn't you just say that, you know, the moral question is where we do have free will, right?
Right.
So, I mean, isn't partially an answer to that was a moral lapse?
Yeah.
And that wasn't God's territory.
You could say that. Yeah, you could say that. You could say that. I think the question is, well, if God is in control, then why didn't God stop it? But you're right. Ultimately, yeah, a human being has the choice to act abhorrently and in evil fashion. And people have the choice to not step in and to allow it to happen, right? And those are choices. Yeah. Yeah. Very good point. Okay, so all of this, although we've gone, obviously now we've just spoken about, you know, I would say more of the extreme examples, but I want to get back to the everyday examples and kind of close this out and then get to the next few areas. So again, the first area of focus is the everyday stress of things just not really working out or not being exactly the way we wanted it. And the first guidance that we have from Judaism is, take a deep breath, recognize that ultimately God is in control. And if this is the reality that is, I might consider summoning or working on my inner patience, which means the ability to change myself to embrace the situation and find something amazing. By the way, I just said the word and find something amazing, which I don't know if I mentioned before, but might as well mention now. Oftentimes, when we do embrace the reality, we'll discover something amazing that we wouldn't have discovered if we were pushing it away continuously. Because as long as we're pushing it away, what are the odds that we're going to find the silver lining or whatever it is that's inherent in this space? It's when we embrace it. You know, on some level, we're still going to be kicking and screaming because we're not perfect. We're not angels. So on some level, we're still going to be fighting it. But if we can somehow, at least part of us, embrace it, we might just find something amazing. Okay, so that's the first idea, patience and the doctrine, the Jewish doctrine of God guiding and God in control. Okay, so that's that. Now the next topic, or the next area of stress, is having too much to do, which I asked before, and I think I got some nods and smiles about that. Right, you ever feel like you have too much to do? Yes, is the short answer, the immediate answer. So you wake up, like I said before, you wake up in the morning and you start running through the things in your head. You're like, I gotta do this, gotta get back to that person. All right, too much, let me just shut down and avoid. Maybe, maybe not, maybe yes. Some people I think get invigorated by having a long list of things to do. I think most people don't get invigorated by that. Nonetheless, we might get stressed out by that. So what to do? So I want to share with you a Hebrew word. And again, everything that I'm telling you now is corroborated. Well, everything I'm telling you now is sourced in ancient Jewish thought, and it's also been corroborated by modern psychology and modern positive psychology, modern wellness thought. So there's a Hebrew word called panimi, not panini. That's a grilled sandwich. Which is something else. But if you want to spell it in English, it's very similar, except the second to last letter is an M and not an N. So it's penimi. Penimi means, gosh, it's such a difficult, it doesn't have a parallel word in English, which is interesting, because maybe it means that in English, it's not something that's a thing. But nonetheless, penimi means somebody who is fiercely, gosh, there's really no English word for it. Someone who's fiercely, inward. Someone who is, penimiut means like the inner aspect of a thing, not the external, but the internal. Like a simple example, like, so you get to know someone. So there's how they look, and then there's who they are. Right? And that might not be at all the same thing, right? Because they might look one way, but that's the external appearance. But who they are is who they are on the inside, correct? Yes? By the way, when you and I are judged by how we look, it's offensive, right? It's offensive. You only are, that's where you stop? Get to know me. So a panimi is not someone who, I don't mean as somebody who always gets to know people as who they are, but that's also true. But panimi is somebody who is not external, not superficial. Oh, here we go. Not superficial. What's the opposite of superficial? Maybe that's the word I'm looking for.
Deep.
Deep. Okay, that works. That works. In this context, though, it means somebody who doesn't get distracted by all the stuff, but somebody who is set in an inward, sincere, deep internal fashion. Again, none of these words work alone, but maybe taken as a collaborative, maybe it's starting to paint the picture. So now let me just get a little bit more specific as to what I'm trying to say. So here's what a panimi does. A panimi says, I have 10 things on my list, and all are very important, and all are all-consuming almost. Okay, but I'm doing one thing right now. And because I'm doing one thing right now, I am giving it 100% of my attention. And because I'm giving it 100% of my attention, I'm not letting anything distract me from this, including, and most importantly, my own inner mind that says, what about the other thing? What about the other thing? What about the other thing? Are you with me on this? How often can we not get anything done because we have to get everything done? And so now another story. There was once it was also a winter, January, Fabrengen. Fabrengen is Yiddish for a Hasidic gathering. In Brooklyn, New York, in Crown Heights, the Lubavitcher Rebbe was leading this gathering. I think it was, I actually have in my notes, 1970. Tuesday, January 27, 1970. There happened to be a whole group of people that were visiting from the Holy Land, from Israel, and they were scheduled to fly back home that day. Again, it was a Tuesday. And there was a farewell talk, farewell address that the Rebbe wanted to give before everyone left. He started talking, continued to talk, and went on and on. And people started looking at their watches like, oh no, like they got to catch a flight. Like, you know when you have a flight and you get nervous because getting late, you got to go? The Rebbe smiled. He looks at everybody. He says, I know what you're thinking. You got a flight to catch. Let me tell you a story. And now you have a story within a story. Story circa 1920s in, this is Russia now. And the story happens in Leningrad in the 1920s. The Rebbe says that his father-in-law, who was the previous Chabad Rebbe, was set to go on a very important mission on behalf of the Jewish community. He was set to travel from Leningrad to Moscow. And he walks into his father-in-law's office. Again, the father-in-law was the leader, the head of the community. He walks into his office like 30 minutes before this very, very important trip and by train is about to set off. And he finds his father-in-law sitting calmly at his desk, you know, writing something, reading something, whatever. So he says, like, he's shocked. And he says, wow, how is it possible? How can you, like, work so calmly when this huge thing is looming and the journey is about to begin? So his father-in-law looked at him and he said, this is what it means to have hatzlacha bizman, which is Hebrew for being successful with time. Time management, right? What does it mean to be successful with time? It means that when you're doing something, that's what you're doing. And you're not doing anything else. So in 30 minutes, I will need to be on a train to Moscow for that mission. But right now, I'm not on the train to Moscow. So if right now my head is on a train to Moscow, guess what is missing? This time, I've eliminated, I have deleted, if you will, this moment in and of itself. Because if this moment only exists as a moment of anxiety, worry, concern, thought about a future moment, so what happened to this moment? Are you with me on this? So the Rebbe said, fast forward to 1970, January 27th, 1970, the Rebbe continues to smile. He looks at all the people that need to catch a flight to Israel and says, all right, we're done, but lesson learned. If you're here, you should be here. When you're in the car on the way to the airport, to JFK, you'll be in a car on the way to the airport. When you're on the flight, you'll be on the flight. But if you're here, might as well be here. Oftentimes, we have anxiety about, or we worry, or we stress about all of the things that we have to do precisely because we're not in the moment. We're not doing what it is that we need to do. And I think a lot of times we think that we can successfully multitask. And you can handle a few things, right? In life, we're always called to handle many things, but not at the same time. You ever have this experience? You read an email, and you're like, you know what? I need to answer that email, but not right now. And then you kind of leave it. Some of us are better, you know, some of us are more efficient. Some of us, I don't know, more efficient. I'm not trying to judge. I'm just saying, some people will answer right away and get it out. Some people will let it linger, right? If we let it linger, and look, I'm not talking from a place of perfection. We're talking about the ideas, right? We're in a safe space to talk about ideas. So if we keep it hanging around, then the challenge is that it becomes another thing to think about that we need to get to. Instead of being in the moment, it's another thing looming that we have to get to. So to consolidate the ideas and bring it back together. The notion of a panini is somebody, not a panini, that's a good sandwich, but a panini, right? In fact, paninis, what am I talking about? How did I not mention it? We used to always have paninis, right? When we got together. That's our go-to. So I'm glad on some level it's almost coming back to that, even in a virtual virtual sense. So look, the Kabbalah of being a panini, not a panini, is that whatever we're doing 100%. And that can go a long way to avoiding the feeling of, I got too much to do, I'm overwhelmed. One thing at a time, classic advice, you take one thing at a time, you do it, you knock it out, and you move on to the next thing. It's a message about time management, it's a message about, you know, inner wellness and happiness. And also, it's about giving honor to the thing that's being done or the conversation that's being had. How often do we have a conversation with somebody face-to-face, but we're looking also... Hold on 1 second, guys. Right? Doesn't that happen? Yeah, we're talking to somebody that we love. A friend, a coworker, an acquaintance, a loved one, whatever it is. But we're distracted. We're distracted by the other stuff that goes on. Look, we're not going to be perfect. Don't worry. I'm not preaching from a place of perfection. Don't worry. Safe space. But let's at least acknowledge and try and think. And again, what's going to happen is the more we're a panimi is somebody who lives by this credo, by being in that moment, in that space, in that time, in that task, just fully immersed. Doesn't mean it should stretch on forever and never get anything else done, but it means that we fully embrace this moment. And again, if we're a panimi, we're more likely to be less stressed about all the other stuff and be more efficient anyway and just be more in the moment. So living in the moment, I guess that's probably the modern way to put it. Being in the moment, being fully present, that's the second point. Let's talk about number three, worry about the future. Anxiety and worry. What is the future going to hold? It's uncertain, it's unknown. What's going to be? Many, many of us are stressed on many different levels, whether it's personal, professional, national, global, whatever it is, what's going to be? In Yiddish, we would say, was wird sein? What's going to, it sounds like everything's better in Yiddish. What's going to be? And because of what's going to be, I'm stressed right now. Okay, so I want to share with you, it's been a while since I shared some texts. I want to share with you, let me just find which number it is. This is going to be text 6a and 6b, and I'm going to read it in the interest of time. Okay, let's jump in. Give me a second. Okay. Okay, here we go. This comes from Proverbs written by King Solomon. Take a look at text 6a. He says, a worry in a person's heart, cast it away. That's what King Solomon writes. If you're worried, cast it away. And my question is, are you kidding me? If only it were so easy, just cast it away. What is this, like a magic sauce? Like what's this magical advice? So take a look at what the Talmud says. Talmud says in 6b on this verse, Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi both interpreted this verse. One said, what does it mean to cast it away? Cast it away from the mind. And the other said, no. What does it mean? Speak about it with others. And the reason why you have these two, I don't have time to get into the minutia of the grammar, but in the original verse, the original verse says the wording is Daiga Belev. Come on, where is this? Scroll up. Daiga Belev ish. If you have a worry in a person's heart, Yashchena. Yashchena, cast it away. So what the second rabbi, what Rabbi Asi says is not, don't read it Yashchena, cast it away, but Yisichena. You know, a shin could be a sin, depending on the dot, on the vowelization, whatever. Again, without getting into too much grammatical stuff, he reimagines the word, revowelizes it, and moves it from cast it away to yisichena, speak about it with others. Two interpretations. One says, yes, cast it away from the mind, and the other one says, speak about it with others. So I want to explore, I want to focus on this for a moment with you, and then we'll close it out. So let's do two more minutes of this. The reality is that when we speak with others about what our worries are, it goes a long way in minimizing, in neutralizing the worry and anxiety. The more, and I'm talking about not just, you know, any random person, but somebody that we trust, somebody that we love, somebody that we respect, somebody, a confidant, somebody that we're connected with, speaking something over with them that's weighing heavily on our heart can go a very, very long way in calming us down and making it better. Number one, for multiple reasons, I'm going to mention two or three of them. Number one, another person might give you and I a fresh perspective on things. So we have our own perspective and we're worried. We speak about somebody else and they say, wait a second, how about this? Think about it this way. And the next thing you know, you're not so anxious. That's number one. Number two is when you speak about something with someone else, the issue that's been in your heart and mind actually becomes clarified to you, and maybe even you can find a new perspective and resolution yourself. Because, again, and this is the truth about communication, is when we speak about something, it clarifies it. You know, when we teach something, we learn it better than when we were the student. That's the way it works. When you speak something over, it becomes clarified. So we should speak it out. Number one, they can help. Number two, we can help better ourselves once we speak it out. And number three, discussing with someone else and having them empathize makes us feel loved and cared for, and makes it, even if it's not going to solve the problem, at least we feel connected. And that goes a long way to de-stressing and soothing our worry and anxiety. But what about the first opinion of the Talmud that says that if you're worried, remove it from your mind? How do you remove it from your mind? Right? Magic, is there a magic mind removal device? Of course not. So here is some Jewish mystical advice, Kabbalistic advice, and really, I would say, pretty much common sense advice, but it's worth repeating. And that is, the only way to move something out of your mind is by putting something else in it. Because the mind cannot think two things at the same time. It can quickly move between two things, right? We can think one thing and quickly switch into something else, but two thoughts at the same time are impossible. Just like two cars can't fit in the same parking spot, right? I've tried. Kidding, right? Just like that's a reality, the laws of physics, two bodies cannot occupy the same space, two thoughts cannot occupy the same mind at the same exact time. Therefore, the greatest and most surest way of removing a negative thought, a stress or anxiety or worry-inducing thought, if you want to remove it, as King Solomon says, remove it, and the Talmud says, remove it from the mind, the best way is not actually by removing it, but by replacing it, by adding another new thought, a happier thought into your mind. I'm going to close it out here because I know everyone has to go. This is the Jewish notion of hitbonenut, which means contemplation or meditation, which is essentially practicing the practice of mindfully and intentionally filling our mind with a thought of our choosing. Not being a victim to the thoughts that come to us, but willfully choosing the thought that we are going to think about. And so when we feel that stressful thought come in, it's only a product of work. It doesn't come naturally or, you know, over time. It certainly doesn't come naturally. It takes time and practice to do this, but we have the ability to intentionally choose which thought to think. And when we're thinking that thought, that positive thought, the other thought is just not there. So I hope this advice has been helpful. These ideas have been helpful on some level in general. Number one, we spoke about, just to recap today, we spoke about the daily stresses, and we spoke about the Jewish concept of embracing the reality that is. We talked about patience. We talked about divine providence and guidance and making something beautiful of what we have, number one. Number two, the second point, having too much to do, we spoke about the idea of being a panimi, being fully engaged in what we're doing and when we're doing the next thing, fully engaged in that, but being present and fully engaged in that moment at that time, and that mitigates all of the other stuff because we're doing this. And the third point, which is about the other stress and the stress and anxiety of things that are going to happen, number one, speak about it with somebody else. Number two, replace it with a happier, more positive thought. I wish all of us lots of blessings and lots of success, and I definitely look forward. And Evan, you're tasked with this responsibility, whether or not you like it, it's your responsibility, making sure that we're all together again very soon in a learning space. All right. Thank you, Evan, as always. Thank you, Yasher Koach, to all of you for being here, and love the opportunity to study and to see you all.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Are we going to do a Hanukkah? Are we going to do something for Hanukkah together, virtual?
Yeah, for sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
That's
Brian.
A very good idea.
Right. Yeah, we'll work on it.
Okay.
Yeah, stay tuned. We'll collaborate. All right. Awesome.
Sounds good. Best wishes to everybody.
Take care, everybody.
Take care.
All right.